The collectibles market is a very fluid thing. What's popular this year is probably not going to be popular next year. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Our guest is certified personal property appraiser and registered Wisconsin auctioneer Shirley Bauman, and she's going to be telling us about a collectible that's been pretty popular over the years, and that's paperweights. Do you have an antique or collectible that you'd like to know more about? Well, join us by calling 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.com. And our Facebook page is The Larry Mueller Show. So post your questions, your comments, your photos on there. Welcome back, Shirley.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Good. Is this kind of a busy time for you? I've seen a lot of estate sales and stuff.
Yes, it is a very busy time for us. As a matter of fact, we've got the biggest estate sale we've ever had coming next weekend, the 4th, 5th, and 6th of November.
Well, thanks for coming in.
Sure. It's my pleasure. I love being here.
I go to estate sales all the time, and I often wonder, how much time does it take? And obviously, it depends on the size, but
yes.
It's got to be a lot of work.
We've actually been working on this one since July.
Oh, my gosh.
Some of them take a week. Some of them take months. So you can imagine the size
I can't imagine. Let's talk about paperweights. You talk about collecting paperweights. What kind of paperweights are we talking about, though?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you. We found these in this estate I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had to do a lot of research because, an appraiser doesn't know everything about everything.
You know how to research. That's
right,
the key, right?
Right. Yeah. What we found here are both antique and modern paperweights in a very large collection. And by antique, I'm talking about 1840s to 1860s, what's called the classic period of paperweights. And they're, if you can imagine, a round glass ball with something decorative inside of it. But at that time, they started making them in France at the big factories, Baccarat, Clichy, St. Louis, Val St. Lambert. And they started making them, contrary to what you'd think, to hold paper down. They made them because they were going through a recession in France. And the glass companies made them to have another kind of sideline to help cash flow during that period of time. And the nobility, the royalty started collecting them and caught their fancy.
Uh-huh.
And so just as today, what the celebrities do, the people follow. And so collecting paperweights became very popular. And if you think back to that period and you look at some of these pictures even of old paperweights, the designs inside of them are made of glass as well. And the canes or rods of glass that decorate inside are tiny pieces, and they didn't have the technology we have today. They were all made by hand, and they're gorgeous, and there's only a limited amount of them out there because they had to be made by hand. And today, a lot of them are actually held in museums or very large private collections.
Yes. Doesn't the Chicago Institute of Art have a nice collection?
Yes, they have a very nice collection, and that collection was a gift to the museum from the gentleman who developed the Magnificent Mile.
Oh, really?
So, some of our wealthy citizens collected paperweights. And there is one up in Neenah.
Really?
We have some collectors up there, and they put together a museum right here in Wisconsin. Plus, if anybody is headed towards the East Coast, Corning Glass in their museum also has a large collection.
Well, that makes sense. And they are absolutely beautiful.
They're just stunning. And what I've learned about them is those little glass canes, how they are made, which sometimes you have to look at them under magnification, will help you tell who made them. The early ones are often not marked. So you need to look at the profile of the glass ball. Is it a little flatter, a little wider? That helps you. Is the, what the design is in the canes. And once you look at them, you start seeing things that are unbelievable. Silhouette canes, for example, that show people or animals in that little maybe quarter of an inch or less space. Made from the 1800s.
Ah. And made of glass. It really is fascinating. Yeah. Do you think that's why people have collected these over the years?
Well, it is. It's part of the fun of the hunt. Number one, they're fabulous pieces of art. Mm-hmm. Number two, it's the hunt. They're not, you know, every antique mall in every town you pass through won't have them. You know, people who like to look and get those fabulous things really enjoy that as well.
So if someone sees a paperweight at an estate sale or what mm-hmm. have you, how do they know if it's something they should be picking up?
Well, that's tough because, as I told you, I've been researching and I've been almost cross-eyed from reading and looking at these paperweights. First of all, if, say, a Baccarat paperweight has an acid etch mark on the bottom.
On the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Those are more modern weights.
Oh.
And doesn't mean they're bad, but they should be priced lower as modern paperweights.
Okay.
They're still making them. And, of course, there's artist-made paperweights today. There's some beautiful ones made by contemporary art glass makers. And, you know, you can pick those up for maybe $40, $50, $60 compared to the thousands you might pay for some of those antique ones. So you want to look for the quality, the telltale signs, and I'd say if you're going to consider buying one of the valuable ones, do your research.
Okay. Well, you know what? Let's go to the phones because we have Vivian in Green Bay. Hi, Vivian. Let's tell us about your collection.
Hello. I don't collect paperweights, but I acquired this somewhere years ago in my thrift and antique travels. And it's about 3 inches across. There's a mirror on the back side. There aren't any sharp edges. It's beveled from the underside to the top side. The perimeter, there's almost a little decoration, a frame around the perimeter that looks like it could be rhinestones. And then in the middle, there are these two toddlers, I would say. They aren't angels, but they're mostly
they
naked.
Never are, right?
That's true. They're mostly naked. They have full heads of hair. One's blonde, one's brunette. In the middle is a heart-shaped, but it's not a severe heart. You know, the contours aren't as deep as some of our modern-day hearts. And then at the top peak of the heart is what appears to be a flame, a yellow flame. And on the inside of the heart is this phrase, "Don't give a hungry man advice, comma, give him something to eat."
Ooh. Wow.
Sounds very interesting.
Go ahead. I'm thinking, is this anything from back to the Depression? But it seems to me it's even earlier than that based on these illustrated children.
Well, it could be. It's hard to say. I mentioned the classic period for collecting, and then there was a revival period around the late 1800s into 1900, the turn of century period. So it's possible that it was there. And then collecting weights fell out of favor again until we have what we call the modern period, starting in about the mid-1950s. So it's possible that it could be from that revival period around 1900. I can't say for sure without saying it, but that's very possible. And those little children you're talking about are probably called putti. And that's kind of, they look like cherubs, but they don't have wings. And that's the phrase that they use for those.
That was the Greek word for it.
Right, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Where should she go to take to figure out if this is worth anything?
Well, from Green Bay, again, Nina isn't far, and there's that glass museum there.
That's a great
idea. And a lot of times, if you call ahead and talk to their education department, there might be somebody there that would take a look at it.
Okay, well, great. Thanks for calling in, Vivian. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Tony in Milwaukee. Hi, Tony. What's your question?
Sure. My question is in regards to my brother and I. We have a very large collection of collectibles, primarily comic books, action figures of different varieties, Star Wars, G.I. Joe, a lot of early Marvel collectibles. And we're at a stage in our lives right now where we're, you know, we want to get rid of them and sell them. And we're wondering, is it more beneficial to try and sell the collectibles as one large lot, or is it maybe better to price them out or sell them individually, and where would we even begin to get estimates on the value of these?
Okay. Very good question, because there are a lot of people who are after even the more modern collectibles, let's say the Star Wars, Star Trek, and that kind of thing. But the comic books from the early stages, if they're in really good condition, can be quite valuable. I'll tell you that the world's record for comic book sales is held by an auctioneer in around the St. Louis area, Wyman, W-E-I-M-A-N, Wyman Auction Service. And you might start by talking to them, because they have as much experience as anybody I could know of in that genre. And they've got followers now that they've held that record and sold comic books for the high prices. So you might just go on the internet and look for Wyman Auctions out of the St. Louis area.
Okay, well, good luck with that, Tony. Our guest is Shirley Bauman. She is a certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. And she's the owner of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. Do you have some questions about collectibles? Give us a call. We have, it looks like all our phones are filled right now, but you can always call us later, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And let's go to, Kathy in Cedarburg, I think, is next. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
And what's your question?
I have inherited a very large baseball card collection. There are other sports cards in there, but I have full sets from different years and different brands. Takes up a quarter of my basement.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's a serious collection.
Do you want to open a museum?
Oh, well, if I could charge enough.
There you go.
And so I bet you want to know what to do with them.
Yeah,
my question is, do you know someone reputable that you would trust? Because I trust you, been listening a long time.
Thank you.
That I could have appraise this?
Well,
I don't know where, but maybe someone who could come to my home, because I would need a trailer.
Sure. I actually appraised the contents of an entire baseball sports memorabilia store going out of business, so I do have quite a bit of experience. But the first thing I have to ask is the vintage of these cards. If they're after the 80s and into the 90s and up, they don't have a lot of value. What we did in the case of this memorabilia store is we only valued the older and rare cards individually, and the others we actually valued by the pound, because we figured out how many cards were in a pound of these common cards. After the 80s, the market was flooded and they just went down, and we gave them something like a penny or two apiece. And we valued them that way, and there were, of course, boxes and boxes and boxes of it, which it sounds like is your situation. And they donated their cards to the Boys and Girls Club, so they could, those common cards. And so they took a tax deduction for it. And so if you want to talk further about that, we can. But that's how we went about that one.
I can't imagine doing by the weight. That's wonderful.
It does take quite a while.
I would imagine. Are yours that vintage, Kathy?
They vary.
Oh, they
vary.
Vintage, okay.
And even the newer ones, they're actual full sets. So there'll be full sets by year of all the Topps cards that came out that year. So I don't know if that makes them more valuable, might make them more interesting to someone.
You never know.
Probably okay. A little bit, but like I said, the market was flooded at that period.
Okay, well, we're going to break for the news. Our guest is Shirley Bauman. She's a certified personal property appraiser. This is Jill Nadeau in for Larry Mueller today. We'll be back after the news. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm filling in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today, we're talking about antiques and collectibles, and we're happy to have Shirley Bauman back on the show. Shirley is a certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She's also owner of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Sales. If you've got a question about an antique or collectible, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email is talk@wpr.org. And of course, you can always post something on our Facebook page. Just look for the Larry Mueller Show. Well, we're back, Shirley. Someone emailed us with a question, and she wanted to know, what's the difference between an estate sale and estate auction, and how should she determine which is going to bring the most money?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. An estate auction is where you get people together and they bid. The auctioneer will hold up this piece of glass or this paperweight or whatever it is and start calling for bids. Do I have $100, now $125, now $150, and go on up. And where estate tag sale, which is what we've got coming up next weekend, is where we've tagged all the items in the home where the people lived. And believe me, this is a big home. And you come in and you look at something and you pay the price if that's what you want. So the difference is it's hard to know where you get the most money. Sometimes some things will go better at auction because of the competitive bidding. And sometimes they go well at sales because by the time you maybe move them to an auction site, you have to rent a facility, you have to take all those things into account, the costs that go along with selling it at that point. And sometimes the person who might want that paperweight just hasn't shown up at the auction.
Sure.
So it varies quite a lot. You know, if you ask people who are only auctioneers, they'll say, always at auction. And, of course, the other people will say, but I do both. So I have, I believe in both methods.
You are fair and unbiased. All right, let's go back to the phones. Linda in Fort Atkinson, what do you have?
Hi. What I have is my brother recently passed away, and in his estate, I found two boards with, like, some red fabric behind them, and they're all old, I think they're old anyway, presidential campaign buttons, and I don't know a thing about them, and so I'm kind of looking for some guidance and where I can take them. I don't want to keep them. I have no interest in them, but I'm wondering if someone else might, and so I don't know where to go, who to talk to. So kind of basic questions about these presidential campaign buttons.
Sure. The first question I have for you is how old or what are the presidents? How far back do they go?
There's no dates on them, but there's some, like it says, our president, Franklin D. Roosevelt, go forward with Stevenson Sparkman. There's one that I think is kind of cute. It says, don't let this happen to you. And there's a shoe with a hole in the bottom of it that says, vote for Ike. There's I like Ike. There's just FDR buttons. There's one that says students for Kennedy with John F. Kennedy's picture on it. I've got a Dewey Bricker on here. Let's see. Count me four. There's a picture of a man. I don't know who it is. And a full, it looks like a pail, like an old lunch pail. I don't know about that. So I don't know if they're like, you know, newer buttons that someone just put together to mount, you know, like for a decoration, or sure, if they're really old. I have no clue. Some of them have really old pictures on it. There's one that says Brian Kern with two pictures on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, the ones that are going to be the most valuable are the ones who actually won the elections, the people we know, the Roosevelts, those Ike, and those kind of things. With Kennedy buttons, unless they're rare, there's, you know, still a lot of people who remember that election and have saved things like that. So the older they are, and from the presidents themselves that actually won the elections, will be your more valuable ones. If you do a little bit of research, you can start learning about them by looking at the back of the buttons, how the pins are attached, how they're actually made. Look at some of those older ones, and you can go and Google that and start looking for how to date pin back buttons is what they're called. And so you can start looking at that. And then you can look at values by checking some of the actual completed sales on eBay. And if you go into their advanced search, you can click on completed sales. You'll have to sign in for that, but there's no cost for it. But then you can look and see what they're going for. And if you find out that you have a very special collection, and I'm not sure from your description that you do, I think special, what I would say would be really special would be older yet, you know, turn of the century and that kind of thing, a little bit older than what you're describing, but you might have some of those as well. Then you could look for an auction house that specializes in political collectibles or Americana. Heritage Auction is one of those. And it would have to be a special collection for them to take it, though.
Okay. Well, I hope they're rare for you, Linda. Let's go to Christine in Franklin. Hi, Christine.
Hi. I was just wondering about pink Depression era glass. I have some of my mother's very, very old plates that she had sitting in the basement. And one of my favorite things is a sugar creamer bowl that is sitting on a pedestal with a little handle in between. I have a lot of bowls and
okay, well, what is that stuff worth these days?
Well, Depression glass is a little bit, it's gone down a bit in recent years. It used to be more sought after, but, you know, it's a market and things go up and down. And right now it's in one of those lower phases, but it is still collectible. There are people buying it, and sometimes people buy particular patterns, maybe. And a pink is popular. The pink, the greens, the light blues are more popular than some of the others. So you do have that going for you, but the cherry blossom pattern is always kind of sought after. People really like that. And some of the others, of course. So what I would suggest right now is enjoy them, see if your family wants to enjoy them with you, and kind of watch the market and see if in the future it might come again. A bowl right now might be a $25, $30 item, whereas before it might have been double that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I like this because I like to collect Depression glass, so it's a good market for me because
right,
I can buy
right.
it.
And I always tell people to collect what they enjoy.
That's right. Absolutely. Let's go to Bob in Clay Banks. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thanks for having the show today.
Sure.
I've got a couple of toy radio flyer wagons that they're about 4 inches long, and one has a sticker from one of the World's Fairs. I think it was there a World's Fair in New York in the 30s or the 40s?
Yes.
I mean, not the 40s, but I have tried looking online to see if there's anything out there, and I haven't had any success in finding anything. Is that anything you've ever heard of?
Yes, I have heard of that, and I think you can get some information online, and I'll see if I can help you get some search terms that might help. Look for, and that the World's Fair in New York was the late 30s, I think 38, 39, that period. So start looking for New York World's Fair collectibles, and then go for collectible toys World's Fair in New York, and I think you might find something, rather than looking for just radio flyer wagons, because then you'll probably be seeing the larger wagons. So that toy, I believe, with the World's Fair information on it would be collectible as a World's Fair item rather than the toy itself. And some of these were remade by the company as promotional items by the radio flyer people. So you look it over and see if it's more modern construction or older on these other ones that aren't dated. But there you might be looking at advertising pieces rather than as a toy.
So there's lots of venues, and when something like that fits in a bunch of different categories, mm-hmm. does that usually mean it's worth a little bit more?
Well, it is a cross-collectible, mm-hmm. then. It's what we call it, and people who collect radio flyer wagons might be after it, as well as somebody who collects advertising or World's Fair collectibles. And so if you do get people competing over it, maybe on an online or a live auction, you might have more people looking for it. Well, anywhere that they can find them, even in the antique shops.
Okay, let's go to Ellen and Mequon. Hi, Ellen.
Hi there. My mom has about 70 little crystal salt dishes with tiny little matching spoons, all different shapes and sizes. I'm curious to know whether that's a viable collectible.
You are talking about the open salts that they used to use on the table before salt shakers became popular. And they'd put the salt in those little bowls and put it on their food with those tiny spoons. They are collectible. And it depends on who made those as to how collectible and valuable they are. Tiffany made some salts, and they can be in the hundreds of dollars, whereas a lot of them that might be just pressed glass might be $3, $4, $5. Beautiful cut glass ones will be more than the pressed glass ones. So it all varies. Colored glass are more collectible than plain ones. Colored glass with etchings on them or cuttings on them become a little bit more collectible. As far as the spoons, the sterling silver ones are more collectible than the silver plated ones. And still, the spoons might be, sterling ones might still only be $10, $12 unless you have a famous maker like a George Jensen. Now, then you can get some competition for it and maybe go up from there. But I'll tell you what, my own personal collection is open salts, but porcelain ones. They're harder to find than the glass ones, but I collect porcelain open salts. So, yeah, they're collectible.
Okay, well, Ellen, they're collectible, but it's complicated, so good luck. We had someone that emailed to say that they have a collection of candy wrappers from the 30s through the 50s. They have about 200 of them. Are these collectible?
Well, yes, I would think they are.
Okay.
At this point, advertising is a hot collectible.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're in good condition...
He says they are.
Yeah.
Clint, yep.
Mm-hmm. I believe that they could be quite collectible and valuable. It depends, again, what they are. 30s, 40s, yes, they can. And even boxes and labels, really good labels, sure. They can be collectible.
Okay. Well, great. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Jack in East Troy. Hi, Jack. What do you have?
Hi. I have a Underwood portable typewriter, and it's in the case, and it's just like the one that was on the HBO series House of Cards.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't see that series, so I don't know which one that is. But... typewriters do have some value. Some do and some don't. It's kind of like everything else we've been talking about today. The portable ones generally are a little bit more collectible in the more modern types, whereas the older ones, you know, with the very old royal ones with maybe a glass shield over the keys, those are the most valuable and in different colors. The Underwoods, you know, I can't tell you exactly the value of them, but good condition makes a difference. You know, they can be in the, I would guess that yours is probably in somewhere the $50 to $100 range, not a particularly valuable piece, but without seeing it, I can't be sure of that.
Now, it was the actual one from House of Cards. That would
now,
be a different story.
That would be different,
right?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's go to Judy in Lodi. Hi, Judy, what do you have?
Hi, I've got some dinner plates made by Currier and Ives. Mm-hmm. And my daughter bought them at an auction, and she paid $35 a piece for them. And I've got 10 of the plates in mint condition, and I was wondering if they were worth anything.
Well, it depends what scene is on the plate. Are they the blue and white ones?
Yes.
Those are probably among the most common. And at this point, they're not going to bring nearly that amount in the collectibles market. So I would enjoy them for now. Now, there are some that are rare, that are different patterns, but this Currier Knives with the blue and white is really, I think it's kind of an old homestead sort of scene, are pretty common on the market right now and not real sought after at the moment.
Okay, Judy, you can enjoy those. Let's go to someone who emailed a question about Beanie Babies. She said she has a lot of them from the early days, and she's really wondering where she can find out what the general value of Beanie Babies is.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that you have a lot of them, because they have really bottomed out on the market, except for a very, very, very few. I come across them often in sales, and I'll tell you, a lot of times we sell them for $1 or $2 a piece, and grandma buys one for the child who has fallen in love with this particular puppy dog. They were made in such high quantity that they haven't become collectible. There are so very many, you know, around. People have boxes and tubs full of them. To find out the value, again, I would look at completed sales on eBay. There's a certain Princess Diana one that has held value, and very few other ones. Of course, you want to make sure that the tags are on them. Without those, they're not very valuable, and that the condition is good, that someone hasn't, you know, played with it a lot and really worn them out. But it was a craze. I had two sisters-in-law who collected, and one bought and sold right away, and the other one just bought, and one's happier than the other.
It's a chance you take, right? Right. Let's go to Don in Eau Claire. Hi, Don.
Hi. I happen to be almost 94 years old. I'm the youngest of and the only surviving of five children. My parents were married in 1910, and growing up, we had a glass sort of display case in the house. With some collectibles, things that my mother cherished that were in there. And in the 40s, when she was still alive and visited me, she said, if there's anything in the house you would like, let me know now so you won't have to fight over it afterwards. Well, anyway, there was a plate I remembered from then. It's a decorative plate. And we have done a little search on it. It has a picture of two people out in a field. There are a couple, I thought they were Monet paintings, one called The Gleaners and one called The Angelus. This happens to be The Angelus, where you see the church steeple in the distance and the people are standing in a prayerful mood. Anyway, that's the scene on the picture on the front of the plate. On the back, it has what looks like, I always call it a beehive, but my caregiver here said it looks more like a thimble. And our daughter had looked in something and said that it was a symbol from the Vienna State Porcelain Factory or something like that back then.
You're shaking your head, Shirley. I am.
Yeah. I am. And that beehive is from Royal Vienna, which is the maker. And you're right, beehive, not thimble. And it does help us, you know, if it's authentic. Again, we've got to do that. And from the sounds of it, you knew that it was given and been in your family a long time. What you want to look at also is if the scene on it is hand-painted or transferred on from like a decal. So if you magnify it and you can see little paint strokes in it and a little bit of raised areas that usually will indicate a hand-painted plate. And they can be quite valuable. We've had some of those in this estate and some really fabulous. And also you want to look if there's a signature of the painter because that may also tell you, help you determine its value. But some can be in a couple $100 ranges for some of those very old, very fine plates, but if it's a transfer decal type of plate, it won't be nearly that much.
Okay. Well, good luck, Don. Nick emailed to ask, say he inherited a trunk full of antique handmade Italian linens. How does he determine the value and what's the best way to sell them?
Well, that's a challenge. Antique handmade linens are a collectible that some people are after. And they will go and they will pay for them, good prices for them. But the market is limited because not everyone wants to care for them or has room to keep them and use them and display them properly. So you do have a somewhat limited market. Where do you find that? I would say you want to look for maybe a fine textiles auction. And you can kind of Google that's the big auction houses or even regional auction houses will have specialty auctions. And maybe, you know, textile museums could tell you who the collectors are of them.
Does condition have a lot to do with that?
Oh, condition is so important in textiles. You want, of course, no rips or tears, that kind of thing. Now, if you have some staining on them, a lot of times you can soak them in OxyClean and get some of that out where people don't realize that. And I'm talking about soaking for like 3 days, not just an hour.
I've got to write that down.
And that might help you out with getting those cleaned up.
Okay, great. Now, we only have a couple more minutes here, but why don't you tell us about this? You've said you've got an estate sale coming up. We'll let you plug it a little
bit. Well, thank you so much. It's up in Portage, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. on Prospect Avenue.
Okay.
And you can watch for my signs once you get there. It's easy off I-39.
Thank you for putting signs out. I love that. Yeah. Okay.
Now, we're limited because the police, you know, have something to say about where we put them, but look for them. We have everything in there. They were big glass collectors. We have Tiffany, Lalique, Quizal, all the big makers, Steuben in the glass. There's fine, fine porcelain, lots of furniture, primitives, antique Christmas, some toys. There's just almost anything. Of course, the paperweights we've been talking about, antique jewelry, hats and vintage clothing and furs and almost anything you could imagine all in one home.
You must have had fun.
Oh, it was like Christmas every day.
How difficult is it for you?
Sterling silver, more than I've seen in one place.
Oh my gosh. People still collect sterling silver?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I didn't think they would. That seems like way too much work.
That's why they don't collect silver plate as much, but sterling still holds its value.
Sterling, they do. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
We have plate, too.
Okay. Well, we've been speaking with Shirley Bauman. She's a certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She's the owner of Bauman Auction Services and Heirloom Appraisal and Estate Services. And as always, it was great to talk with her. Thank you so much for coming in, Shirley.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to thank Nyasia Ellison for our on-air production, and Dave Potras for technical direction. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn will be talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly of turning 60. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us.